The headlines this hour. Ceremonies are held in Iran and other countries on the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says U.S. former President Donald Trump must face trial for assassinating General Qasem Soleimani.
The then U.S. President must be put on trial.
And the Yemeni army says it has seized an Emirati-flagged vessel carrying military equipment, which was used in hostile acts. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. Ceremonies are underway in Iran to mark the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the country's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. They were assassinated in an American drone strike outside of Baghdad Airport on January 3, 2020. People from all walks of life participated in the ceremonies across Iran to mark the occasion. They vent anger at the U.S. for assassinating the anti-terror figures. Participants also called for bringing the perpetrators to justice. During a gathering in the capital, Tehran, President Ebrahim Raisi said former U.S. President Donald Trump, who ordered the assassinations, must be brought to justice.
This was a horrible crime. What should be done? The murderer, the aggressor, the main criminal, the then U.S. president, must be put on trial and there must be an act of retaliation and the divine order must be implemented.
Raisi said if Trump and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for Soleimani's assassination, Muslims will take revenge. People from other parts of the world, including in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and the Gaza Strip, are also commemorating the occasion with ceremonies. In Iraq, people held a vigil at the attack scene and renewed their call for the withdrawal of all U.S. forces from their country. Just 2 days after the targeted killing, Iraqi parliamentarians passed a bill requiring the government to expel American forces. Political commentator Marcus Papadopoulos says the assassination of General Soleimani was an absolute tragedy for mankind, but it enlightened the world about Iran's vital role against Western-backed terrorism.
Today's tragic anniversary is one for all of mankind, because General Soleimani not only served the Iranian people, he served mankind in general. General Soleimani masterminded the destruction of ISIS in Iraq and the liberation of Iraqi territory from that abhorrent terrorist organization. He played a vitally important role in the strategic defeat of ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria. So General Soleimani's death was, without a doubt, a tragedy for mankind. But through his death, people have become enlightened about not just the great man himself, but about the role of Iran in the fight against Western-backed terrorism. What we need to do is to keep on relaying to people throughout the world that General Soleimani was absolutely vital in the war against ISIS, the war against Al-Qaeda, that America, Britain, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Israel are in cahoots with both ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We need to keep on relaying to people across the world that Iran is a major component in the war against ISIS and Al-Qaeda, a war which will continue for many, many years.
As the world is marking the assassination of the anniversary of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, different aspects of his life and beliefs are coming to light. One of them is his humane aspect, his compassion for Christians, for Muslims, and for other religions. This was specifically displayed in how he fought to eliminate Daesh terrorists, which represented a fake image of Islam.
Late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, was seen as a hero who stood up for the suppressed Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in Syria and Iraq, as well as other parts of West Asia. According to many Syrians and Iraqis, he was fearless, courageous, unselfish, and always present on the battlefield. General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against the US-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in West Asia. He was the strategic master of many battles against Takfiri terrorists in Syria. He played an important role in the liberation of the Christian-dominated regions from the grip of Takfiri terrorists in the country. Also, he had a great reputation in Iraq, where Daesh conquered large parts of the country. He managed to unite Sunni Kurds and Shia fighters in the battles against Takfiri terrorists. Therefore, for many Iraqis, he was a hero, like in Syria. General Soleimani was able to mark very important plans in line with providing regional security by preventing Daesh terrorists from overthrowing governments in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries.
Daesh was actually an American and Zionist creation in order to destroy a number of Muslim countries as well as give a horrible image to Islam, because Daesh terrorists indulged in horrific crimes against innocent people. And so that project that the imperialists and the Zionists had launched, we saw how they erupted in Iraq in July of 2014, and by 2017 they were wiped out through the efforts of martyr General Qasem Soleimani.
General Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020, while on a trip to the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. This raises the question, why should Washington kill the man who fought the terrorists in West Asia most successfully? General Soleimani was a powerful, strategic mastermind who revealed the ugly face of Western interference in both Syria and Iraq. His assassination exposed the US's support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism.
The actions of foreign-backed terrorist groups like Daesh and the Al-Nusra Front were clearly designed to show an image of Islam that was simply not true. These groups were manifestations of the U.S. as well as Israeli and Saudi regimes. Muslims and Christians and people of other faiths in Syria and in Iraq, under the guidance of General Soleimani, could bring an end to the Daesh menace.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was loved by people of the region as a defender of the oppressed, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions. Western-sponsored terrorist groups such as Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra sought to promote an image of Islam that was false. These groups were created by the Israeli regime and America with the financial support of Saudi Arabia. And General Soleimani was the one who confronted these deviant groups in Iraq and Syria. He managed to help the oppressed. He tried to save women, men, and children in Iraq and Syria from the crimes of Takfiri terrorists, no matter what faith they were from. He united Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in the fight against terrorists and once and for all defeated them.
Well, as Daesh's tactics included killing innocent people, kidnapping women and raping them, killing children, and so on. These are things that have absolutely nothing to do with Islam. In fact, they are the very antithesis of the values of Islam that places a great premium on saving and protecting human life. So while Daesh and their backers were busy in killing innocent people, and with the deliberate policy, of course, of the imperialists and the Zionists to create a very violent and negative image of Islam, but the people, obviously, the targeted people, were horrified by their actions, whether it was in Iraq or in Syria.
millions of people in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and the rest of the world attended the funeral of General Soleimani. This shows that he is beloved by the West Asian nations and all the free people of the world.
Iran says the Western parties to the 2015 deal, known as the JCPOA, have realized that they have to step back from having excessive demands during ongoing talks in Vienna. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says the European signatories can neither have any requests beyond the accord nor act below their commitments to remove U.S. sanctions. Khatibzadeh has also called the mechanism of the Vienna talks clear and transparent. Tehran's proposals on sanctions removal and its nuclear commitments are expected to be the main topics. Iran and the remaining signatories of the 2015 deal are set to resume their talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna. Removing anti-Iran sanctions has so far been the main focus of the eighth round of talks, which was adjourned on Thursday for New Year's Eve, or New Year's holiday. We have reached out to our correspondent, Vienna Homolesky, for the latest update on the negotiations. Home over to you.
Yes, Carver, as you said, after a three-day pause, the sides are set to resume this eighth round of the Vienna talks aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Here, it's just past 3 p.m. Vienna time, but we're expecting maybe in 2 or 3 hours' time the Iranian lead delegate, Mr. Barghari Khani, to hold another meeting with the EU coordinator, Enrico Mora. And already we're hearing informal consultations at the expert and high-ranking place, of course, behind closed doors. So it looks like the decision that the sides have made is to make this eighth round, if they can, the final round of talks to reach a conclusion. We'll have to see if that is possible. Earlier, just before the three-day pause, there were various comments made. For instance, the Russian ambassador and the delegate to the negotiations here said that he believes it is realistically possible for the sides to come to a successful conclusion by the first half of February, for instance. And he said that he believes that even those who are skeptical about these talks, meaning the delegates involved, now acknowledge that progress is indeed being made and the talks are moving forward. Also, another source close to the negotiations and representing the Europeans was speaking to us before this three-day pause, and that source was telling us that there are still issues to be discussed when it comes to the two Iranian proposals that have become quite fundamentally important for the Iranian team here. One is the issue of verification and the other is guarantees. So that source was telling us that for Iran, the current level of assurances that the Americans have said they're willing to give is not enough, that Iran wants more assurances and guarantees when it comes to sanctions lifting and also when it comes to actions following an agreement. If there is an agreement, will the U.S. withdraw from the JCPOA again? Would it impose new sanctions in violations of the deal? How can the Iranians get this assurance or guarantees that there is not going to be such an incident? And there were questions about how indeed that is possible. So this source was telling us that now the sides maybe are asking for more clarifications from the Iranians or trying to come up with some kind of legal organs to make this happen. How is it going to be possible? Because we know, of course, that the JCPOA is not a legally binding treaty. It is seen as a political agreement. How can you involve such a guarantee in the context of this agreement? And then there's also the issue of verification. Iran saying that it will only go back to its nuclear commitments after it verifies the removal of U.S. sanctions. So this is also something that's turned out to be one of the sticking points in these talks. But despite these issues that are still going to be discussed, at least some are still hoping that these talks can successfully conclude by early this year. That is the hope, and that's why the delegates are saying they're continuing to come to Vienna. They keep trying to keep this momentum to reach some kind of a conclusion.
Thank you so much, Homolesky. We appreciate it. Homolesky there from Vienna, a pleasure. On to news from Yemen, the Yemeni army says it has captured an Emirati-flagged vessel off the country's western port city of Hodeidah. The army spokesman says the ship was carrying military equipment. Yahya Sari says the vessel was engaged in hostile acts targeting Yemen's security and stability. According to Saudi media, the ship was heading to the Saudi port of Jizan in the Red Sea. They claimed that it was carrying equipment from a shuttered field hospital. The seizure comes amid intensified Saudi attacks on Yemen. On Sunday alone, 5 civilians were killed and several others injured in 2 Saudi airstrikes on Yemen. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015. The war has left hundreds of thousands dead, displacing millions of Yemenis. The Palestinian Commission for Prisoners is renewing warnings against the deteriorating health condition of an inmate who has been going on a hunger strike for months. The warning comes after medical experts said that Hisham Abu Hawash is in danger of sudden death or a stroke. He went on a hunger strike more than 140 days ago to protest his illegal administrative detention by the Israeli regime. Currently, he is in a state of coma. Palestinian officials say that Israel's refusal to free Abu Hawash is clear evidence that the regime is willing to execute him. They say the silence of the international community and human rights organizations shows their complicity in this crime. Abu Hawash is one of hundreds of Palestinian inmates languishing in Israeli jails without a charge or trial. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United States and its allies should ease their restrictions and get to work helping revive the Afghan economy. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Daniel Larrison Ryder. This article is titled, U.S. Choking Afghan People to Death. Stay tuned for more. The United States and its allies should ease their restrictions and get to work helping revive the Afghan economy. Doing so would reinforce regional stability, stem the drug trade, and reduce the likelihood of another migration crisis. Saving millions of Afghans from destitution might also redeem U.S. prestige after its chaotic withdrawal. The unavoidable side effect would be some degree of assistance for the Taliban, but such trade-offs are a hallmark of realpolitik. The withdrawal from Afghanistan should have marked the end of the U.S. war there, but an even more destructive economic warfare had taken its place. The Afghan people are being punished more by U.S. regime sanctions than they were by its bombs. And now they're staring one of the largest man-made famines in the face. Severe humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan is an example of what U.S. sanctions can do to an economy that is also being starved of government reserves and international aid. Other economies targeted by broad and crippling sanctions have some resources to fall back on. Afghanistan was so dependent on U.S. and international support that the moment the funding Spigot was turned off and the sanctions took effect, the country went into free fall. Maximum pressure on Iran and Venezuela is cruel, but doing the same thing to an even more vulnerable country is far more vicious. There is a fear of legitimizing the Taliban if restrictions are eased and government assets are unfrozen. But the Biden administration should consider what it would mean for the U.S. regime to be responsible for causing the mass starvation of millions of people. This would not only be a monstrous crime against innocent people, which is what matters most, but it would also be an unparalleled propaganda win for adversaries. The worst thing the U.S. could do after ending its unwinnable war in Afghanistan is to be responsible for creating a humanitarian catastrophe on this scale through the government's mindless attachment to sanctions and punitive measures. There has always been a vindicative aspect to U.S. sanctions. States that defy the U.S. are punished, and they continue to be punished until they obey. The fact that it is ordinary people that bear the burden of this punishment usually doesn't matter to policymakers, who insist that they have carved out exemptions and then do nothing when even those exemptions fail to work. Even when the exemptions work as intended, an economy cannot function on humanitarian aid alone. This is not hard to grasp. If you make trade and commerce with the outside world all but impossible, you cannot provide enough aid to sustain the tens of millions of people that need help. Keeping sanctions in place and keeping government assets frozen while you permit a trickle of aid money to flow amounts to putting an entire nation under siege. Pointing to the trickle of aid money as proof that you are committed to helping the people is just insulting at that point. As Smith says, the main reason for devastation is the West chokehold on the economy. It is within the power of the U.S. and its allies to release that chokehold, but they have to want to stop choking the life out of the Afghan people. As Li Feng explained in a recent report, the few humanitarian exemptions to sanctions in Afghanistan are woefully inadequate to address the needs of the Afghan people. But those humanitarian exemptions overseen by the U.S. Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control are nowhere near enough, according to experts who spoke to Intercept. The OFAC licenses, including new licenses released on December 22nd, have not curbed the global chilling effect of the sanctions and are ineffective in preventing a spiraling disaster that could kill more Afghan people than nearly 20 years of U.S.-backed war and occupation. As we have seen in many other cases, overcompliance by financial institutions and businesses is a major problem. These institutions would rather not take the chance of being on the wrong side of U.S. sanctions, and so they ride off doing business in Afghanistan. The OFAC licenses never work, never will, added Schumacher. The moment that the banks see any sanction or any sort of restriction, they just walk away from doing any transactions. That's what's happening now in Afghanistan. The banks are not willing to take business, and no amount of OFAC licenses is going to satisfy their needs. Sanctions are an indiscriminate weapon, and they kill lots of innocent civilians. If nothing is done, they will soon be responsible for causing mass starvation and mass death in Afghanistan. This is still a preventable outcome, but there is not much time left to avert the worst of a man-made famine that is already happening.
This is the teacher. A radio documentary on the life of prominent martyrs of Islam.
کمتر وقتی است که من به یاد جناب آقای قاسم سلیمانی باشم و دعا نکنم. اما خیلی به شما عزیزه.
Most of the time in my prayers I remember General Qasim Soleimani. He was very dear to me.
ولی ما در زندگی پاسداری خودمون باید به الگوهای بزرگ نگاه کنیم. عمر ما می‌گذرد.
We as the soldiers of Islam have to look at great role models in our lives.
Although our hearts have been set on fire, and although we are mourning this great loss, we know that martyrdom in the way of Allah was your biggest wish.
Today's a special story, the life and character of Shahid General Haj Qasim Soleimani. Dear listeners, as most of you know, General Shahid Haj Qasim Soleimani, who was the commander of the Quds Force of IRGC, played a key role in the developments of West Asia, especially in fighting the Takfiri West-backed terrorists as well as the Zionist regime of Israel. Shortly before his martyrdom, Shahid Soleimani, in a documentary, explained in full detail how he and the Quds Force helped Hezbollah of Lebanon to defeat the Israeli regime in the 2006 33-day war between Hezbollah and the Israeli regime. He said that the Israelis wanted to launch a surprise attack against Hezbollah in order to put an end to it. They were self-assured that nearly 200,000 American armed forces could back them up and do not let Hezbollah attack them. As a matter of fact, the Israelis wanted to completely change the demographic of Lebanon. Shahid General Haj Qasim Soleimani said that the goal of Israel was to occupy Lebanon once again and completely destroy Hezbollah under the pretext of saving two of its captives. However, thanks to the intelligence operations of the Quds Force and the vigilance of Hezbollah, they were able to predict this attack of the Israelis, and Hezbollah was fully prepared to defend itself and its country, Lebanon. And now Ayatollah Javadi Amuli talks about the personality of Shahid Qasim Soleimani.
کمتر وقتی است که من به یاد جناب آقای قاسم سلیمانی باشم و دعا نکنم، اما خیلی پیش ما عزیزه. همه ما وامدار شهادت و مجاهدت این برادر عزیز.
Most of the time in my prayers I remember General Qasim Soleimani. He was very dear to me. We are all indebted to this martyred brother of ours, Shahid General Qasim Soleimani. Last year he came to the city of Qom to visit the religious authorities here. He had a meeting with me too. When our meeting was finished and the other people left the room, he asked me to do something for him. He took a piece of cloth out of his pocket and said, "This is a piece of my shroud. Would you sign it for me and testify that I was a faithful person?" I said, "I am not qualified enough to testify this for you. Who am I to do so?" Now he asked me to testify for himself, who was a righteous person. He served his whole life for the cause of Islam. He safeguarded us. He protected us against the enemies. He saved our faces and families. He protected our religion, our Islamic system. He served Imam Khomeini and our current leader. Finally, I accepted and signed his shroud.
گفتیم خدایا تو شاهدی. گفتیم هو شاهد. خدایا تو شاهدی این عزیز ما.
کارگزار. I wrote on that piece of cloth هو شاهد, which means, O Allah, I testify that this dear man has served you his whole life. And now you can see that by being martyred on the path of Allah and Islam, he is now in the presence of Allah, and he will be resurrected with the prophets of Allah, the Ahlul Bayt, and the martyrs of Karbala, especially Imam al-Husayn.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. Shahid General Haj Qasim Soleimani disclosed many secrets about the 33-day war between Hezbollah and the Israeli regime. He said that Shahid Imad Mughniya was an extremely influential figure in Hezbollah's victory against the Israelis. One of the amazing things that Shahid Imad Mughniya did was that he was able to target Israeli Hummers in Israeli soil and take the ones in it captive. In this way, he was able to capture many Israelis and bring them to Lebanon. Shahid Soleimani went on to say that Shahid Mughniya was careful that the ones inside the vehicles would not die, but rather only get wounded so that they could take them captive. Shahid Haj Qasim Soleimani compared Shahid Mughniya to Malik al-Ashtar after he was martyred. He said that we had the same feeling as Imam Ali did when Malik al-Ashtar was martyred. Shahid Qasim Soleimani praised Hezbollah as a very prudent and powerful force, that before conducting any operation, they would make the necessary preparements. For example, when they took Israelis captive, they were fully prepared for the Israelis' response. This was one of the keys to the victory of Hezbollah. This is the voice of Shahid Qasem Soleimani, along with the English translation of his words.
We as the soldiers of Islam have to look at great role models in our lives. Our life will end one day, whether we are in the war fronts or our houses. This will come fast. Even if we live our whole life in the best hotel, or even we are the head of the world, we will die one day. Therefore, selecting the right path in our life is very important.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani, in a documentary, spoke about his role and presence in the 33-day war between Hezbollah and Israel. He said he was in Syria and was unable to cross the Syria-Lebanon borders as it was constantly under aerial attack. However, Shahid Mughniyeh knew a way which was safe. Therefore, he went to Syria and took Shahid Soleimani to Lebanon from that secret passageway. Haj Qasem made a report to the Supreme Leader. The situation was critical in Lebanon. Buildings were being leveled by the Israeli attacks. There were villages that were entirely occupied by Shias and were completely separate from Christian and Sunni villages. Therefore, the Israelis freely attacked those villages and brutally killed many innocent people. Nevertheless, the Supreme Leader of Iran assured Haj Qasem and all the members of Hezbollah and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah that you will definitely achieve victory as you are in the path of truth. Then, the Supreme Leader told them to recite the supplication of Joshan Sagir, which means the supplication of the lesser armor. Ultimately, thanks to Hezbollah's strong faith in God and the Ahlul Bayt, at night, while the Israeli forces were conducting a heliborne operation, one of the Hezbollah commanders fired a rocket that landed on the helicopter and killed all the Israelis in that helicopter. The Israelis thought Hezbollah had acquired sophisticated homing missiles. Therefore, they quickly ended the war and demanded ceasefire. If it weren't for the well-calculated plans of the Quds Force of IRGC and Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani, Hezbollah wouldn't have achieved such a victory. Haj Qasem Soleimani was martyred on January 3, 2020 by the terrorist Zionist regime of America. May Allah bless Shahid Soleimani and further elevate his high ranks. Now we invite you to listen to Sister Zainab talking about Shahid General Qasem Soleimani.
I saw nothing but beauty. This is the famous sentence of Lady Zainab after the tragedy of Karbala. After witnessing all the men of her family, her sons, her brothers and his loyal companions being brutally killed in the way of Allah, Lady Zainab said, "I saw nothing but beauty." And today, General Soleimani, we saw nothing but beauty. You lived such a beautiful life and gave your life in the way of Allah so beautifully. You were martyred in the way of Allah by the hands of the Yazid of our time. You spent many years safeguarding the shrine of Lady Zainab in Syria, and if it weren't for your braveries and sacrifices, the enemy would have demolished Lady Zainab's shrine as soon as it could. If it weren't for your braveries and sacrifices, we would be fighting ISIS inside the cities of Iran today. You are a hero for all Iranians and Muslim youth all over the world. Although our hearts have been set on fire, and although we are mourning this great loss, we know that martyrdom in the way of Allah was your biggest wish. And now that you have reached this high rank, the rank of being a martyr in the way of Allah, we ask you to pray for us so that we can live and die like you, a life and death full of purity and honor.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of The Teacher, which was about the great martyr of Islam, Shahid Haj Qasim Soleimani. Please don't forget to log on to our website, which is www.parsetoday.com. And if you have any questions or suggestions, send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. I am now in my grandma's small yard. My grandma has gone on a trip to visit her relatives. Therefore, I'm here to water her plants. I love this small, beautiful yard. In this yard, there is a berry tree, a cherry tree, and a cypress, as well as red roses. petunias and the shrub of night-blooming jasmine. You know, these plants are abundant in Tehran and Alborz provinces, especially in the villages and suburbs around. Let's go to Shahristanak village today. This village is so beautiful and has really unique weather. I'll set off to this village after watering my grandma's plants. Shahristanak village is located in Asara rural district in Alborz province. This village is situated 55 kilometers northeast of Karaj, between Tehran and Alborz provinces. This village is 2,190 meters above the sea level. It's cold in winter and mild and pleasant in summer. A river which carries a huge volume of water passes through the village and pours into Karaj River. Shahristanak is a historical village. Nasiruddin Shah Qajar used to have a special palace in this village. The historical relics remained show that this village dates back to 6th century AH. Some of the historical relics in this village include Dozd Band Castle, Shensotun Hill, Nasiri Palace or Shahristanak Palace. And I am now in Shahristanak village. I'm standing by a very beautiful river, which its sound you can hear. Here's full of berry and cherry trees, which have no fruits at this time of the year. However, birds have perched on the branches of these trees and are singing charmingly. Oh, no music is attractive as what we hear in the nature. Don't you agree with me? And I am now in Shahristanak Palace. This palace was built in 1896 by the order of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar. Unfortunately, most parts of this beautiful palace have been damaged. Almost nothing has remained from the second floor of this building, though you can guess how beautiful this building used to be. Oh, look, this is a really big piece of rock. I think it's over 4 meters high. There are some carvings on this rock which cannot be read at all. By an old, huge cypress tree. Cypress is one of the ancient symbols of Iran. There are ancient cypress trees in almost every city in Iran. The height of this cypress tree is 17 meters and it has a giant trunk. Oh, this tree is really pretty. I can't take my eyes off it. Oh, well, I'd like to sit beneath this old tree and lean against its trunk.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. There's a very famous tradition from Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha, in which, you know, maybe today this may be understood in a very negative manner, unfortunately, but you must understand who is saying this. The Hazrat Zahra Salamullah alayha is the pinnacle and the apex of a role model for a sister, for a lady, for a woman, both in terms of the physical development and in terms of the spiritual development. Not only to say that she is the pinnacle of that, but she has to be that particular uswa, that role model that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given for those Muslim ladies. So in this tradition, understanding that obviously there's no such thing, or unfortunately some people may see this as a male type of thing, or a misogynist type of hadith, but no, this is narrated from her. She's a lady, she's the best of ladies, and she is the one who is saying this. If anybody may have a problem, they need to go and take it up with the books of hadith and try and say that this is not from Allah, but this is a known hadith to be from Hazrat Zahra salamullah alayha. So she says that the best thing for a lady, or for the nisa, it says khayrun lin nisa, that's how hadith starts. So the best thing for ladies is that without there being any need, right, obviously this is important, that without there being any need, there's no necessity for her to do so, that those men who are not her mahram, so obviously we have this concept in Islam of mahram and not mahram, so those individuals who are not her mahram, so basically they are not related to her either by blood or by relation or association, such as her husband, her father-in-law and so on, do not see her. Right, again, this can have different meaning, whether like she wears a hijab or she stays away from gatherings such as, or from public eye, that's another discussion altogether. But the hadith says that she stays away from the sight of men who are not mahram. And it is, and those people who are not mahram to her, she does not look at them. So here we have two things. So the best thing for a lady is that she is not looked at by those who are not mahram to her. So she does not go to gatherings where she's in this thing. Again, at the time where there's no need for her to do so. If there's a need, obviously she has to do what she has to do. And that she doesn't look at those who are non-mahram. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to understand the teachings of Islam in its proper place, and to understand the wisdom behind some of these teachings. If we don't understand the wisdom, at least that we try and practice it because of those individuals who said it. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, what do you call a country which kills an icon, anti-terrorist fighter? Lieutenant Qasem Soleimani was loved by the people of the region as a true freedom fighter, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions or having no religion at all. He led the fight